Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Tim. As Christy said, one of the pastors here. Great to be with you this morning on this cooler summer morning. So it's going to get hot again. Am I right? Oh, yeah. This is just a joke. It's just a kidding us, messing with us a little bit. I'm super excited about the baptism services tonight, too. This has been an exciting season. And, you know, we said six or nine, and then you all clapped. And then we said 12, and then you all clapped. Michael just said there's probably 15 or 16. We're going to do this all day. We're just going to keep adding three. So basically, baptism is for anybody who has given their life to Jesus. They said, Jesus, I want you to be the Lord of my life. I want to follow you my whole life, and I want to make this public by being baptized. Jesus was baptized. The scriptures teach that we should be baptized. And so if you're not baptized, if you're a follower of Jesus and you say, man, I'd love to be baptized, then come talk to us after the service today. We would love to set you up for tonight. And I just think if you're going to come, which I think you should, it'd be a great evening. Bring a lawn chair because there may be a lot of us. So if you can, bring a lawn chair for your bottom to sit on. So it's going to be great. We have another couple baptisms, a couple of people being baptized later this week. And then on September 10th, we're going to have our last outdoor baptism service. So September 10th, that's our kickoff Sunday. We're going to do a baptism that night at the lake. After that, man, we're back inside unless you're into super cold. And then Michael will baptize anybody in November. So it's great being near the lake to be able to enjoy these kind of things, to be able to just be down at the water. We're very fortunate. And these baptism services are always filled with joy and delight and peace. I just love them. Now, however, on that same lake shore, just a few kilometers to the other direction, they have another event that happens, okay? And so people, they get their tubes, and they sit out on the lake, on the water, and then they watch a movie. It's called Jaws at the Lake. And this year they played the movie called The Shallows, which is about this girl trapped on a little outcrop of rock a little way off the shore, and this shark that's trying to eat her. And this whole thing's playing off our general fear of water. And so people dangled their feet in the water and imagined while they watched this shark swim around there. So it's the same lake as our baptisms, even the same depth, but not the same sense of peace. See, I think we have a good deal of healthy fear for the depths of the sea. I'm very uncomfortable if I'm out in water and I can't see the bottom. Pools are different. You kind of know there's nothing down there, but out on a big lake or out in the ocean, it's just, I don't like it. I remember we were snorkeling in Mexico one time, and it was great. And then I was swimming along, and I look, and there's a barracuda about 40 feet from me just sitting there in the water looking at me. And I thought, I mean, it looked like a killing machine. And I thought, I am out of my element here. This is not my home. So I'm just going to paddle back to shore and call it good. It's why we say we're in over our heads when we get in trouble. Or why when we say, you know, I'm drowning when we get into trouble. We were made to be land creatures. Now, we can explore the water, and some people are more brave than others, spend a lot more time in the water. But most of us are more comfortable with our feet on dry ground. Who's more comfortable with their feet on dry ground? Anybody in the room? Yeah, yeah, yeah. How many of you love the deep? Okay, we got a few of you that love being in the deep. Nice one. Well, today's miracle takes place in the deep. And it takes place when even more scary, when there's a storm on the water. So we're going to look at this miracle. It's found in John chapter 6. John chapter 6, and we'll start in verse 16. It says this: when evening came, Jesus' disciples went down to the lake where they got into a boat and set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark, and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water. And they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I. Don't be afraid." Then they were willing to take him into the boat. And immediately the boat reached the shore where they were headed. Okay, this is just a short miracle. But it appears three times in the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and John all talk about this miracle of Jesus walking on the water. And every time, we know it's the same miracle because every time it happens right after they feed the 5,000. Jesus feeds the 5,000 people. So they feed the 5,000 people, and then right after that, Jesus walks on the water. Now, if you read the three accounts, you might be confused because they're a little different from each other. I mean, the big idea is the same. The boys are out on a lake in a storm. Jesus isn't with them. Then he shows up. They're terrified. He says, "It's okay, it's me." They let him into the boat. Storm calms down. They reach the other side. So those things are kind of similar, but there are some noticeable discrepancies in each of the three stories. Matthew and Mark say that Jesus sent the disciples out into the storm. John, you don't get that. John makes it clear, John's trying to communicate that they were out there without being sent. They just went out on their own. In Matthew records Peter also walking on the water. That's a pretty big deal, I'm thinking. Peter walked on the water. Have any of you ever tried to walk on the water? Is that just me? Okay, good. So some of you, okay, awesome. Yeah, I've just been by a pool and said, "Oh, Jesus, I got the faith." And never really worked out. So I'm not the only kind of weirdo in the room. That's awesome. But Mark doesn't record that, which is interesting because Mark is writing down what Peter told him to write down. So Peter didn't even mention this bit about him walking on the water. Mark mentions that Jesus acted as if he was going to pass right by them. And Matthew and John don't mention that. So what's going on here? Can we trust the accounts? They all seem to be so different. Well, each author has his own intention of what stood out to them. They're looking at the same event, but with a different perspective, trying to communicate a different thing. And we do this all the time. You know, Kickoff Sunday, as Christy said, is just around the corner, September 10th. And I love Kickoff Sunday. It is so fun. I love it when we all come back together after being scattered all summer. I love it when we all start making our plans, get back into routine, making our plans for what we're going to do for the fall. And I am hoping and encouraging you to, as part of your plan, to make gathering together on a regular basis as part of your plan, as part of your habit. And so that we can continue to meet together like this. The Kickoff Sunday has been a lot of fun in the past, and this year will be no different. Now, if I were to ask several people what they remembered about Kickoff Sunday last year, I would get different answers. Some might say, "Oh, I love the cotton candy machine. That was the best part, the cotton candy machine. Pastor Dallas had cotton candy in his hair and all over his clothes. It was awesome. These people love sugary treats. And so the cotton candy is the thing that jumps out to them." Other people will say, someone else might say, "No, I love the tailgate theme, you know, where we all wore our sports jerseys. And that was fun. Everybody's wearing sports jerseys to church." And I get that too. For some people, they got to wear their Riders jersey in Alberta without being afraid. And that's important to them, okay? If I ask somebody else, they might say, "Pastor Tim preached a short sermon finally." And that's a big deal. You know, although it cut into their early Sunday morning nap, it was still a refreshing change. So which of them was right? Well, they all were, even though their accounts were different, because they all were describing the same event, but from a different perspective with a different thing they're trying to communicate. And that's what's happening here with the three alternate recollections of this miracle of Jesus walking on the water. The differences do not indicate a false occurrence. In fact, if they were all exactly the same, if they all had that like word for word exactly the same, you might say, someone's tampered with this a little bit. It's the different perspectives that kind of give validity to the text. Well, today we're focusing on John's perspective, not Matthew's, not Mark's. We're looking at John's perspective. What did John see? What did John remember? What was John trying to communicate? And I think John's description tells us three things about about what's going on here. The first thing it tells us is that the disciples were apart from Jesus. So John 1 makes it very clear. The disciples were apart from Jesus, and he doesn't say in his text that Jesus sent them away. So his listeners wouldn't have known that. Now, maybe he wondered if Jesus was just testing them and they should have stayed with him. Maybe he didn't feel good about being apart from Jesus. Maybe he felt that staying and praying with Jesus would have been the best thing. We don't know. What is sure that John just highlights the fact that they were out on the lake and that Jesus had not yet joined them. A little bit later, the crowd that Jesus had fed with the bread and the fish, the feeding of the 5,000, which we talked about last week, the crowd noted that only one boat had been there and that Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but that they had gone off alone. It is important to John that his listeners got the fact that Jesus and his disciples were separate from each other. So have you ever been separate from God? Have you ever felt distance from God? Now, I know theologians in the room will say, well, we can't. God is omnipresent. How can we be separate from God? And you'd quote to me from Psalm 139, where can I go from your spirit, Lord? And where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your right hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. And I wouldn't disagree with that, that God is everywhere. But then I wonder why Isaiah would say, all we like sheep have gone astray. I wonder why James would say, if one of you should wander away, or why he would say, draw near to God. God is omnipresent, but he will never force his presence on us. He's a perfect gentleman. He will always make himself available, but he will always allow us to choose whether or not we will embrace his presence, whether or not we will stay close to him, whether or not we will keep in step with him. And as I've gotten older, I've found that I can't handle being very far away from God. I've used this analogy of the willow tree before, but I won't use it again here because it makes so much sense to me about my proximity to Jesus. Now, I love a willow tree with its big, big branches that reaches forever, it seems. And as when I was younger, I felt like I've been connected to Jesus since I was like 5 years old. But when I was younger, in my early 20s, whatever, I felt like I could be way over here at the farthest branch, at the farthest leaf. Still connected to the tree, but kind of looking out and living my life. You know, still connected. But then as I got older, especially during that season of suffering, I felt that actually I can't get very far away from the trunk at all. I need to be hunkered in so close to the trunk of the tree. If that tree represents God, I need to be so close to the heart of God. I can't function well. If I take a step away, I start to get a bit shaky. If I take two steps away, fear creeps in, jealousy creeps in, shame creeps in. If I take three steps away, man, I'm a mess. The things that have no eternal value start to become very important to me. It really matters that people like me. It really matters that I've got money and things. It really matters that my desires are satisfied, that only good things happen to me, that I can make sense of everything. It really matters that my rights are protected. I start acting in ways that are contrary to God's will and end up suffering deeply for that. Why do I put myself through that? Why do I go off alone? And some of you have been living 10 steps away from the presence of God for months, for years, and you've kind of just gotten used to it. You might be able to recall a time when you and Jesus were really close. You recall it with fondness. Ah, man, I remember those days. Maybe you miss those days. But these days, it feels like that was another life, another time. now you're living in kind of a second-rate reality and just accepting it as normal. Or maybe you've never experienced this kind of closeness with Jesus, and your heart craves it. You long for close connection with a spiritual force outside yourself, something greater than yourself, something more profound, something bigger than yourself, something above you, someone good and true who you can trust. You're tired of that deep internal loneliness, and you somehow know that it shouldn't be that way. Friends, you shouldn't be apart from Jesus. You were not meant to go off alone. You weren't intended to have it all figured out by yourself. You were meant to remain in Jesus. Jesus praying says this, "My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me." It was and is Jesus' prayer that we would remain in him. And I'm concerned, I'm afraid, I wonder if we've grown used to having distance between us and God. We've just kind of grown used to it. We said, yeah, well, that's for some people, but not for me anymore. And so much so that we don't even want to change. We're not desperate for his presence. We're content with living in a substandard relationship with Jesus. And John wanted to point out that reality to us. He wanted his listeners, including you and me, to feel the discomfort, the incongruency of the disciples going away without Jesus. He wanted us to be aware that this is a very real possibility. And in that possibility, he introduces a new danger. Because the second thing John's description tells us is that the disciples were struggling with their situation. He makes it clear that it was a dark and that there was a terrible storm on the sea. It was the first literary reference to, it was a dark and stormy night. There was nothing good about the situation. It was frightening. It was dangerous. It was difficult. Matthew describes the situation as the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves. Mark says the disciples were straining at the oars because the wind was against them. This was no delightful evening cruise. This was a death trip. I don't know if you've ever been caught out on a storm in a lake. Being so close to Sylvan, I bet you some of you have. And it can come up awful fast. I think it was almost 5 years ago to the day that Jennifer and I came to Sylvan Lake kind of for one of our very first times to candidate for the role as lead pastor. And somebody had this swell idea that it would be fun if we went out on the lake to kind of enjoy what's all being offered here. So Frank and Sherry Weeb took Jennifer and I down to a dock on the lake, and Brian Engel met us with a pontoon boat. And so we went out. It would be great fun, they said. Well, a storm came up on the lake. And pretty soon, this little 3-hour tour turned into a desperate attempt to just get back to shore. We were soaking wet from the rain and from the waves sloshing over. We're jostled back and forth. The joke was, if I didn't accept the role as lead pastor, they were just going to let us drown. Okay, Brian said he had the contract right there. It was just a bit damp. You know, so, well, we made it back to shore, and I want you to know I am happy to be your lead pastor. It had nothing to do with that storm, and we're just grateful to be here. Storms are not something to be messed with, and John wanted to make it very clear that the disciples were in a terrible predicament. They were trying to roll their way through it, but they weren't getting anywhere. It's no surprise that we describe difficult times in our lives as storms. It's because those times are so terrifying and unnerving. We don't have easy answers for them. We can't just wish them away. They do damage. They break things we thought were unbreakable. They leave us feeling small and vulnerable. These feelings we've been trying to bury and hide because we don't want anybody to see. But storms are inevitable. We will all face them. They come at us unexpectedly. They come at us unrelentlessly. They come at us uninvited. And maybe you're in the middle of a storm right now. A relationship is on shaky ground. Your physical health is deteriorating. Your mental health is hanging on by a thread. Financial ruin is staring you in the face. Feelings of guilt and shame are overwhelming you, and you would do anything to get out of this storm, to wake up from this nightmare, but it just keeps coming at you. And then you discover that you're in the middle of this storm alone.